coming to you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who's about to learn what the heck is going on with season 39 of Survivor. I am Rob Sesternino, and hello, welcome to the Survivor preseason. We back, and we are ready to go, and I have a tag team duo of men who went out to Fiji to learn about everything that's going on. You can imagine giant paper mache heads of them right here in the studio. Please welcome Josh Wiggler and Mr. Mixmaster Mike Bloom.
Rob, I'm so happy you put in the money to get all that paper mache to cover my big nose on your giant bust of me. And that really means a lot that you would go the extra mile just for that.
I just can't believe that you couldn't pony up for the wombat hat replica for me. And just because it's just my giant head, you couldn't even get my mustard-colored parachute shorts.
Yes, from the Rumble. Okay.
I know, you said tag team, and it just made me sorely unhappy that Josh and I were ships in the night when it came to the Royal Rumble, which is
maybe
still
for the
fairly
best
on the minds of people at the time that people are talking about.
That's another podcast. That's from last week's Robin Akiva Need a Podcast.
Yeah, this is Survivor Lost 2, right? This is the sequel to the Survivor
Reams
Lost
Revenge.
Situation.
Reams Revenge, right. We most recently all recorded together on the Brant Steele simulation of season one of Lost. But that, look, put all that nonsense aside, because this is it. This is the main event. We are back talking about real USA Survivor coming up here in just a matter of weeks. In Josh, perhaps the most truncated preseason of all time.
Certainly since I've been covering Survivor as a reporter, this is by far and away the shortest preseason. What are you gonna do? The people in my mentions, stop adding me about it. I've told you once, I'll tell you again, don't at me. Decisions that are far above my pay grade. But we're here, it's happening, it's real, and I'm so delighted for this one for a number of reasons, but primarily, the primary reason has really nothing to do with Survivor the season itself, but the fact that I had a very exciting, exceptional, special co-pilot along the ride with me for this preseason, and that was Mixmaster Mike himself making his Survivor preseason debut out there for Parade Magazine, and I am a proud Papa Bear of this
it's
cub
real
reporter becoming a man out there.
I had my Survivor
bar mitzvah.
So
great to see.
For season 39.
Yes. Oh my God, Mike. I'm just so thrilled to finally be able to talk about our adventure together.
Yeah, so, you know, I mentioned this briefly when we doted a bit on Survivor Island of the Idols at the end of Edge of Extinction, when there was that 30-second promo during the reunion that made people who were saying, what the heck is going on, maybe add an exclamation point to the end of that question mark based on what was shown. And yeah, Josh and I were able to go out there to Fiji to cover the preseason of Survivor 39, my very first time going out there. And I mean, I will say with no ounce of sardonic mean whatsoever that it might have been one of the best experiences of my life. We're going to touch upon, you know, all the stuff that we got to do. There were some really opportune moments that I think we got to take advantage of over the course of this season in particular that makes it a bit different from other seasons that Josh has been out of, you know, in the past. But I mean, I also couldn't have done it without this guy. We have many Fijian honeymoon photos together, as my wife calls it, that I'm sure will get posted now that the embargo has lifted. But
has the embargo lifted on the secret texts that must have been exchanged between our respective wives who were furious with us for partying it up in Fiji, especially as Angela was very close to bringing Asher Bloom into the universe?
Yeah, it's been such a long offseason, at least in my opinion, especially sitting on this information for, you know, nearing 6 months at this point. I mean, maybe it's because my son was born 2 weeks before Edge of Extinction ended, but I don't know. It seems like the past several months, and not just because of the truncated preseason, but it's felt very long to me. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
Whoa. Is that real? Did your wife's text
I think there was a little bit of correspondence.
There was some commiseration while Josh, because there's a different time schedule. I think we were trying to, you know, remain as much out of the doghouse as the war doghouse as we could possibly be.
The Bob doghouse.
The Dan house.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, you know, we were across the world doing some pretty ridiculous things in Fiji, and they were able to, you know, talk about it and talk about the fact that we were doing absolutely silly things together, as we're going to be talking about over the course of this podcast.
We were roommates. We shared a room. We slumbered in the hot Fijian nights together. We had lots of talks and planning sessions and strategy sessions and just great bonding moments that occurred between Mike Bloom before Lost Down the Hatch was even a twinkle in our collective eye at that point, Mike. We've been on a great journey together this year, and much of it blossomed and began here on the Island of the Idols. So it is our great pleasure to finally open the doors to this secret place and finally talk about it a little bit.
So let's set up what we're going to do here today. So Josh and Mike have been out to Fiji. They were on location. They learned everything. This is how I operate. I put my head in the sand. I try to learn as little as possible about future Survivor seasons, wherever I can help it. Because for me, then it keeps it fresh as we go through it in the real time. And so what we have done here today is I'm in the blackout. I have not followed anything Survivor this morning. And so I am going to learn and react to whatever Josh and my, and don't lie to me. Don't tell me like fake things that aren't true.
We can't play two truths and a lie with you.
No, don't do that. But I will get to react to the things that you are going to tell me and the listeners about this new season of Survivor.
I like it. That sounds really fun.
And there's certainly a lot as well. Josh and I have come up together
It's a lot.
Yeah, 7 things that we learned while going on set for Survivor Island of the Idol. Some of it deals with the titular island itself, some with Boston Rob and Sandra, some with the cast, etc. So there's a lot to experience over the course of that week we were in Fiji together, and I'm happy to finally get into it, as Josh has alluded to.
Yeah. Here's what I know. We have Rob and Sandra are going to be there. I've been seeing commercials for that, and they're going to be coaches of players. That's from what I understand. That's all I've got on Island of the Idols.
Yeah, I think we can start there and elaborate. I think it's going to be easy enough to do. And I will just begin by being shameless, and I will come out and say thr.com/survivor to plug my stuff. And Mike, where can people find your beautiful articles that you are writing about this season?
Parade.com/tag/survivor. I'm also trying to come up with a hub page, I think, for everything Island of the Idols related, because as we're going to be talking about near the end of this podcast, there's going to be a lot of coverage coming out from both our ways over the course of these 2+ weeks. So
39 articles!
Really?
16 days!
For Mike, that's pretty close. For Mike's sake, that is pretty darn close to the
truth.
You're
not too far away from the number. You know, I might give you the HOH closest without going over here.
Nice. Mike, you are still young and spry enough to put out a volume that I will never be able to approach again. I can't wait to read it all.
Well, I am very loud, so that volume does make sense.
Okay. All right. So what is number one? What is number one on the list of the 7 things we're going to learn here today in this podcast?
Well, let's start with, as you guys mentioned, what I think the Survivor audience conventionally knew or found out about Island of the Idols as of the end of May. Boston Rob, Sandra Diaz-Schwein are back, sort of. They're not playing the game, and I cannot say this enough.
Great.
Boston Rob and Sandra will not enter the game. They will not become players. This is not a Big Brother 14 situation.
Yes.
They're going to be serving as advisors for the entirety of the season, living out there on the titular Island of the Idols. And we'll get into, you know, what exactly they're going to do in a little bit. But I also want to mention that as well. You know, Josh put up a great interview with Rob and Sandra that we did. We actually had the opportunity to go out and visit the Island of the Idols. Yeah, which was, I mean, Josh, you can talk through your first reaction to this, but this was a big old shocker for me, at least, when we found out this was happening.
Oh, yeah, no, hugely surprised. You know, one of the things that I was going to do when I got out there was I was gonna come to Jeff Probst and Matt Van Wagenen with, like, a list of suggestions for, like, all right, you guys need themes. I got themes. You need themes? Who wants themes? I'm slinging themes at a discount. They're free. Free of charge. Just ideas. Take them. Have them. Let's get away from the edge of extinction and let's start coming up with some things that you can do if you need ideas. And nowhere, even in the realm of the vicinity of the closest approximation of the center of the list, did I have anything resembling Boston Rob and Sandra Diaz-Twine and their gigantic frickin' head statues were secretly inhabiting an island that everybody would be going out to visit. So when I learned this information, I did a lot of, like, the Wandoff caliber laughter directly in Jeff Probst's face as I was finding out this information for the first time. Cause I was astonished. I was shocked. I was tickled by it. And it was presented to me as basically like a sentient ghost island, right? Like ghost island hinged on this, you know, this library of artifacts, this like a haunted museum, a spooky playground, if you will, that is out there that's populated by all these different relics from Survivor seasons past, that there's really not a ton of that personality popped on the screen, I think. And I think that the idea behind IOI, as Mike and I have affectionately come to call it, though typed out, it looks like a lowercase LOL, which may also be appropriate for some people.
Which is what you literally did in Jeff's face.
You know, it was described to me sort of as a sentient ghost island with actual people representing that personality, and there being this really whimsical bent to it, and having Rob and Sandra out there living it up, talking the talk, walking the walk, and
I think we
and
did
Mike
have a lot
exactly
of Boston Rob ghost in Evolution Strategy also.
Yeah, did we mean that seriously?
Yeah.
Did we have any...
We never had Ghost of Sandra.
We did not. We did not have Sandra's ghost. We did have Boston Rob's ghost. We had Boston God as well, if I recall. And like both of these things have kind of come true.
Yeah, TEOS predicted it.
This is another TEOS prediction.
That's like the Simpsons did it of audiobooks, because if you record for 300 hours, you're bound to predict some things.
You're about to get it. 100%.
Mike, I want to circle back to what you said about Rob and Sandra are coaches. They will not be players because, and you sound adamant about this, which it puts me at ease because that's my biggest concern going into this, because I remember Big Brother 14 very well. We just revisited it with Dalton Ross's oral history of Dan's funeral. Josh doesn't know what any of this is, but Josh, back in Big Brother 14, what happened was there were coaches in Big Brother 14, and it was Mike Boogie, and it was Dan, and it was Brittany and Janelle, and they were coaches, and Russell's brother was there, and so was Psycho Sid's son, and there was three people on each team, and then they had one night where, I don't know if this was an America's Choice, which activated this, but the coaches were allowed to go into the diary room and push a reset button, and if anybody pushed the reset button, then they would come into the game, all the coaches would come into the game. And I think that everybody did it except for Mike Boogie. And then all of a sudden the coaches were players. And that was my big concern coming into this. But Mike, you say that on your, you feel good about this.
If Rob and Sandra come back into the game, I will eat fish guts. I mean, Jeff had said
I'd
directly,
be careful about swearing on your son about it. I would, just to interrupt you really quick, Mike, is what I would say is that Jeff said that very directly, that Rob and Sandra are not playing, that they will not be playing, that they are not eligible for the $1 million on this season. They are not players this season. And Boston Rob, I've checked the transcript, had said, him and Sandra had said on multiple occasions, and we'll be here all the way, and they can't vote us out this time. So at the very least, they have said to us that there will not be any game in-game playable appearances from Rob and Sandra. Whether or not we've been lied to is another question.
Yes.
But I feel strongly like Mike, perhaps not quite as strongly, but I would be very, very disappointed if we had been lied to.
Lied is maybe, what did I say, tricked?
It's a similar thing. I'd be very annoyed to be tricked about this. I feel like we were told in as upfront a way as humanly possible that I would feel like my trust had been violated if this is revoked. My understanding as well, they are not playing the game.
And in terms of a comparison to another Survivor season, I know we're going a bit international here, but the fifth season of Survivor South Africa did probably what was the closest equivalent to this twist. And even then, it's still very different, where they had two tribes and each one was captained by their own captain of sports. They brought in
Danielle DiLorenzo.
No, unfortunately not, but that would have been fantastic. They brought in two elite South African athletes to serve as the coach of each of their tribes. They couldn't vote, and they couldn't be voted out, but they still did everything else in the game. They competed in challenges, etc. Boston Rob and Sandra also cannot vote and cannot be voted out, but they're not competing in challenges. There's no Rob's tribe and Sandra's tribe. They're going to be working together and living together on this Island of the Idols. And that's the other big thing as well, is, as Josh mentioned before, Rob, I think, said directly to us, you know, if we're going to talk the talk, we need to walk the walk. And Josh and I walked in on them constructing a shelter, even toughing it out, getting back to their Survivor roots to make sure that they got nice and ready to host a Survivor boot camp of sorts.
Yeah. Why do Rob and Sandra need to live on an island?
One of the things that Rob said was like, we like it.
He said
like, it's kind of sick, but I missed this.
Yeah.
So it was a compulsion, much like Lost. The island called back to him, and if he was going to do this, he wanted to do it the real way. And Sandra agreed.
Yeah. He is crazy like that, because I know that there was a poker tournament in the Bahamas, maybe back in January, and Rob was trying to go, and he was saying on Twitter that he would live outside on the beach if they got him into the poker tournament, and he was like asking people to retweet that they didn't have to pay him, he would like live on the beach there. I forget which island it was on, and he would live outside. I don't think he ended up doing that, but maybe he was just getting ready to then go back to go to Fiji and live out there.
It was practice, VR for BR.
And there are some fun, I'm going to come up in a couple days with an interview that I did with Rob and Sandra as well. And they have fun cover stories. I believe Sandra told her work that she was stationed in Germany, while Rob didn't tell, he told Amber, but he didn't tell his kids. He told his kids that he was going to be in Australia on a contract job. So I'll be very intrigued to see Sandra's workplace and Rob's children react to the actual revelation that they're on the season.
Yeah, well, they're in for a surprise.
Just a bit, as will the players as well, which we'll definitely get into in these future points.
Okay.
Point number two.
Number two.
And you know, maybe this should have been point number one, but it's been the talking point ever since we saw the final shot of that teaser back in May. There are two gigantic heads of Boston Rob and Sandra in Fiji. We just need to ruminate on that.
Okay. Is there an idol inside either Rob or Sandra's giant head?
And there's got to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know that, but like now that you're saying it, you have to imagine that that's
right. Crawl down Rob's throat.
Yeah, crawl in Sandra's ear. Right.
Yeah, it's like Double Dare when you have to go into the nose.
That's exactly
and
what I was going to say.
Flag.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, Jeff describes it, you know, I think he used a lot of analogies. He said like, you know, Survivor, Mount Rushmore, Mount Olympus. And there's a certain image I think you create in your head when Jeff is sort of describing this concept to you, as Josh mentioned before. But really nothing could compare to when we pulled up to the island in that boat and we saw 20-foot busts of Boston Rob and Sandra Diaz-Schwein. Like, they could be sitting on Lucy's piano or Schroeder's piano from the Peanuts. It's a masterwork from the art department, but at the same time, it is ludicrous.
Deep cut Snoopy reference.
Yeah. I love me some Sunday comics, but yeah, I mean, it's, I will say again, up close, it's beautifully done. It's all made out of wood and sheet metal, but it's also busts of Boston Rob and Sandra.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. And like, it was so, it was one of the great delights of doing Survivor preseason stuff is getting to have the internet's reaction before the internet gets to have its reaction. Mm-hmm. And so like much of like the same chatter that I saw on Twitter when the preview came out, and you see like Rob and Sandra marching out from the jungle, with the statues of their gigantic frickin' heads flanking them and then crossing their arms like badasses. And like everybody's just like cracking up being like, excuse me, what is that? Was very, very similar to our reactions when our boat like rounded the corner.
Excuse me?
Yes, it was exactly that, Lyrsa. We rounded the corner and we saw like from a distance on the boat, like, wow, okay, so they really did it. They really did it. And I guess they 3D scanned their heads and like a whole to do in the creation.
This wasn't like, you know, when they tried to like redo that painting when they did like that statue of Lucy and the soccer player and they completely bungled it. Like they made sure to get a realistic scan of modern day Boston Rob and Sandra. So they created the best facsimile possible given the material.
So one of the things I like about Survivor always being in Fiji for the foreseeable future is that I think that they should finish out the Survivor Mount Rushmore and keep it. I think that this should be like a permanent fixture in all of the, like, I don't know, you want to move those to tribal council after the season, but I like it. I know a lot of people really don't like the heads. Doesn't bother me.
I think it's hysterical. I love it.
I think what you could do is put it in tribal council and then make it be like a Zoltar statue. And have them go to Boston Rob and Sandra and be like, please give me an idol. That's my wish.
Your wish is granted. Smarten up, Mike. Yeah.
It's a fantastic thing to drive into. I believe we're going to get into people getting sent to Island of the Idols in a little bit, but I believe when people actually get dropped off, they're not going to be dropped off directly in front of the statues like we were. I think they're going to be dropped off like down the beach so they can catch
their
reactions
walking
down the beach and seeing it. But it also ties into one thing that I actually really like about Island of the Idols is it reminds me a bit of like, we've all heard the Bill Murray folklore, right? Well, where Bill Murray will do things like steal someone's fries or like shake someone's hand at a urinal and then whisper to someone's ear like, nobody's ever going to believe this. Who's going to come back from this and describe to people how they went to an island flanked by two giant statues of Boston Rob and Sandra? And who do you think is actually going to believe them when they tell them this fish tale?
Yeah, I think we should talk that through, and we should talk through a little bit of how Island of the Idols works, because that element of like how much to share and what to hold on to as a secret and what kinds of stories you want to tell to your tribe mates, I think is very central to the foundation of the season, such as the quote unquote Survivor gods conceived of it.
Okay, is this number three?
Before, I just want to mention one thing. Boston Rob now has a big bee hat on his statue. Now we can move forward.
Okay, great. I don't even like that little, that giant bee hat. Okay.
All right, so point number three. Let's get into how Island of the Idols is going to work. So, much like island twists in the past, someone is going to be sent to the Island of the Idols. Now, here's the catch, and this is something that production really hammered home to us as well when they were talking through this twist with us. This is going to be probably one of the highest variance twists that the show has done. They really want to make sure that people are kept on their toes this season. I think Matt Van Wagenen said something to me along the lines of, you know, so much, there's so much Survivor history, that there's so much predictability that can occur, and people have been able to accurately predict when things will happen. So the method, for example, that someone gets sent to Island of the Idols is going to be completely different each and every episode. For the first episode, it's going to be, they're going to have their first immunity challenge. The tribe that loses, one person's going to get picked at random to go. And they're going to come back to their tribe before tribal council. But it could be something completely different in the future. So this person is going to get to Island of the Idols. They're going to see Big Boston Rob and Sandra. They're going to see Lil Boston Rob and Sandra come out.
Lil's going to be there too?
Hey, why did I get a giant statue?
Yeah, where's my giant statue?
She got a Lil statue.
Yeah, exactly. But they're going to come out. They're going to describe like, hey,
so dumb.
You're not...
So dumb.
No reaction.
So stupid. It's so dumb.
They're gonna say you're not dreaming, you're not dreamsing. This is Island of the Idols. We're your mentors. We're your teachers. We're gonna teach you something. For the first lesson, for example, we're gonna teach you how to make a fire. And so this person's gonna basically spend an afternoon with Boston Rob and Sandra, learning a lesson that can be applicable to Survivor. The lesson can vary. It can be something tangible like fire making or spear fishing. Or it can be something intangible like learning how to lie or learning how to pin two people against each other. It's going to vary, but I think.
Is there a syllabus where then there's like a lesson plan?
So that's the thing. Jeff told me before going out there, they actually, you know, did a lot of correspondence with Rob and Sandra. And they basically said, like, Rob and Sandra have a very interesting role, not only in that they're mentors, but they're sort of like producers of the Island of the Idols twist. They essentially asked them, what are some lessons that you feel are key for every Survivor player to know? They compiled the list, sent it to them, and then they sort of created a syllabus based on that. So each week is going to be a different lesson here. And basically, the person's going to learn that lesson, and then there's going to be a test. Now, these tests can vary. The test can be physical. In this, the fire-making example, for instance, the person's then Rob and Sandra are going to say, all right, you know how to make a fire. Let's see if you can beat me in a fire-making contest. And so the first person to go to Island of the Idols is going to get the opportunity to challenge Rob in a fire-making contest. If they pass this test in this particular instance, they're going to get a Chris Noble-esque idol that they can use at that night's tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose, they lose their vote. So to Josh's point earlier about some almost humanizing Ghost Island, it presents that, you know, opportunity, you know, risk-reward type of deal. But now I think it's a bit more fluid. You know, they're not going to get there and Boston Robert Sanders is going to say no game today. There's going to be some sort of test every single round here in the season.
Okay.
They're going to Boston Rob College.
Yeah. Okay.
Smarten up. Indeed. Yeah.
I feel like this is going to take a lot of airtime.
This is, I am concerned about this. This is a concern because we'll talk about it in a little while, but it'll be worth reiterating that, you know, Mike and I didn't find out about Boston Rob and Sandra and Island of the Idols until after we had interviewed everybody. We had no idea what the theme was. We certainly had no idea that we were about to be in the presence of Rob and Sandra. And we love this cast. We really had a great time talking to these people. And when I found out about it, that's where my head went as well. After like the initial shock wore off, I was like, man, I really hope that this doesn't suck away too much airtime from these really, really fun, fantastic people. I think this is one of the best cast seasons of Survivor in my tenure of doing this kind of thing. And as long as that's not the case, I think it's a really whimsical and fun idea. I think it will be interesting to see how they fit it into a 42-minute episode of TV. I don't see why it should be any more or less distracting than an Exile Island sequence or a Redemption mm-hmm. Island sequence. I think especially if like they're able to maybe cut down on reward challenges in addition to immunity challenges. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if they can get creative okay. about
if
how
you're
going to
lose the reward
using,
challenge. All right, you got me. I'd rather see this than a reward challenge.
What might help this situation is, again, let's go back to variance, because the tests and the prizes are also going to be different every time, to the point where sometimes these tests don't even take place on Island of the Idols. Jeff gave me another example, which might not come to fruition later on in the season, unlike the fire making, but let's say it's something like, okay, we're going to teach you how to do a slide puzzle. Now, the next immunity challenge is going to have a slide puzzle at the end of it. Your test is to put yourself in that hero position and complete the slide puzzle. If you do, you get an advantage. So sometimes it's going to be things where you have to take that lesson, go back to camp and institute them, you know, almost like apply that lesson directly within the game to get the prize that you want to. So there is a chance that we actually might not be spending that much time on the Island of the Idols if there's not going to be stuff directly happening in there game-wise. Also, the prizes won't all be advantages from what Jeff tells me, hopefully to avoid another advantage get-in. It could be, especially in the beginning, things like chickens or other, you know, camp life items as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's move on to item number four here, because that's, you know, a lot happening. That's a lot that's worth explaining. And item number four is that the contestants are not going to have any idea about it, because item number four is going to be the way that we start the season, and it's true to the nature of this twist, very unconventional, because we are not getting a marooning. These two tribes are going to be boated to their individual camps, dropped off, and that's it. Hmm. We're going Survivor Palau, Survivor Fiji style. There's no Jeff-esque introduction. There's just a beach and a flag that says Island of the Idols, and that title is going to make their brains run rampant.
Survivor All-Stars, we had no marooning. It was just basically like that. They were all on our boats, and they just brought us there, and they're like, that's it?
Yeah, but at that point, like, what's there to guess? You see on your buff that it's All-Stars. I think the thing
we didn't know
who else
was
there.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the thing.
That's the question. Yeah.
So it's like All-Stars, but they also know who each other are because they've been at Ponderosa. Well, they don't really know who each other are, but, you know, you can assume looking around who's on the other tribe. But, yeah, I mean, I personally am very excited for this just because I loved when they brought back the marooning for Survivor Second Chance. Josh, I can only assume what that was like to encounter in the moment. But if you look at, you know, the past several seasons, we had 31 was a marooning, 32 was a marooning, 33 was like a landlocked marooning, 34 was a marooning, 35 was a marooning, 36 and 37 had, you know, these opening challenges, and then 38 was a marooning. Again, they want to keep people on their toes. It got to a point where in a few interviews that I did, people were like, yeah, I already have my strategy of looking for the advantage on the boat. And I'm excited when they find out that there is no boat. There's just a beach.
I'm not in love with maroonings. So I think that that's fine.
I think anything that's going to get us to meeting the people quicker, I'm happy about. And especially, I believe that the premiere is 90 minutes.
Yeah, 90 minutes.
So it's a 90-minute premiere. There's no marooning. There will be some preamble, I'm sure, and like the opening narration that Jeff typically does. I'm sure that we'll get like scenes of Rob and Sandra early on their own before whoever comes to visit them comes to visit them. But with 90 minutes and no marooning, there's a lot of opportunity for opportunity. There's a lot of chances for getting to know these players right from the start of the season. And I think that was something that was very helpful with David versus Goliath, clearly a season that I have raved about mm-hmm. in the past.
Yeah, we didn't even get a tribal council.
I know, yeah, but I felt like that premiere allowed us to like get like kind of like these individualized portraits of so many of the different contestants in that runtime, and I think that lack of a tribal council actually helped accentuate the plight of the Davids there. There's a tribal council in this premiere, we can tell you that.
Okay,
there will not be a medevac in the first episode. We can tell you that.
No,
much.
No, nary bad weather to be found, which was another thing that I was very lucky about.
It was beautiful.
All the mayhem you faced last year, Josh.
I was on pins and needles, and thankfully, we were all right. We made it.
Yeah, you're very, very fortunate in an odd-numbered season.
I know. Believe me. I constantly was looking in the mirror being like, Wigwar, you're really doing this to yourself again. And thankfully, the sun came out the whole way through. But I think that episode really allowed the personalities to shine. And I'm optimistic that a 90-minute premiere without a marooning gives us an opportunity for a fairly character-oriented first episode of the season, which could really set the deck for the rest of the season. Even if Island of the Idols becomes a kind of a dominant presence, you'll have a better idea of who's going to the Island of the Idols and what's at stake there.
Okay.
Yeah. And I also want to talk about the title a little bit as well, because what Jeff and Matt Van Wagenen were hoping with this title is it is a little bit of a double entendre, where I think when you look at Island of the Idols, considering our modern survivor-oriented brains, you think, oh my God, there's an island full of hidden immunity idols. Do we get sent to it? Is it on our island? What are we going to do? When it turns out, no, idols actually refers to Rob and Sandra. They are the idols. And so hopefully it will also foster a little bit of paranoia in these people early on. And, you know, not to spoil too much about what happens in the first few days, but there definitely is a little bit of hesitation in, you know, there's going to be a lot of big fans that are playing this season. And they're a little weirded out about not officially getting the game started by Jeff Probst, to the point where they sort of feel like they're in this weird purgatorial state of like, are we really playing Survivor if Jeff Probst doesn't say we're playing Survivor?
Well, what are they doing?
going slowly insane. Yes. is what we can tease from what Mike and I observed when we visited the beaches. One tribe camp in particular where the madness was off the charts, and it was the funniest tribe visit I have ever done in I think it's 7 or 8 seasons of getting out there on location. I don't remember, but it was gut-bustingly funny, outrageously so. And a lot of it, I think, was driven by the fact that these players are kind of like, what the hell's going on here? Mm-hmm. I think that there is that quality. So I think if they were trying to stir a paranoia, from what we observed anyway, mission accomplished.
So let's talk about this cast a little bit.
Is this number 5? Yes.
This is number 5 because, as Josh said, I mean, I don't think either one of us can speak highly enough about this group of 20 individuals. Look, I thought maybe I even biased because it was my first group, but I think Josh, Jeff, Matt Van Wagon, it seems like everybody across the board has been extremely happy with these 20 individuals who are going to be succumbing to the Island of the Idols and much more.
Yeah, I said on a couple of occasions that I felt like I was cheating on David versus Goliath because I loved these people so much. And with like the benefit of time and distance, I need IOI to prove to me that it could step up to the level of DVG. David versus Goliath itself has become a Goliath for me, and IOI is the David in this situation. But I wouldn't discount the David in this situation. Mm-hmm. It's a really eclectic group, people from a lot of different walks of life, people with very powerful stories of survival in their own right, people who are hilarious storytellers. I mean, I think that'll come across in the interviews that Mike did that you'll read on Parade, and the interviews that I did that you'll hear here on Rob Has a Podcast. That there are some really, really, really articulate and funny and emotional people on this cast, and some who maybe aren't quite that, but the vast majority of whom I thought were really eloquent, articulate storytellers, and I was hanging on most of their words, the vast majority of their words.
Yeah, and the really interesting thing about this cast in general is, obviously, this is the first cast in the post-Lynn Spillman era.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the news of, you know, her no longer working with the show, I think that prompted a lot of, you know, paranoid feelings, understandably so, from the community, because they said, you know, Lynn has brought so many fantastic, over 500 Survivor players over the years, present company included, that have, you know, graced our television screens and become some of our favorite reality TV characters. I can personally say, from what I experienced, I don't think we need to lose sleep over it. I think that what they decided to go for here is a really, as Josh said, really interesting group. I actually talked with Jeff a little bit about the casting philosophy, and he had something really interesting to say. He said, "We changed our casting intention several years ago to focus on story. Not so much what somebody does as an occupation, but what is your life experience about? Where are you in life right now? Where did you come from, and where do you see yourself going? And why does Survivor make sense at this point in your life?" And I feel like, no matter how you feel about the person, across the board, everyone had a different life story to tell. Some of them are absolutely out of this world. Some of them are maybe a bit more down to earth and relatable. But you can really tell, even from talking to these people, that, as Josh says, they're great storytellers. And you can tell that they were cast for their ability to talk about their life story and then simultaneously tie that into how they're going to play the game.
Mike, do you have a favorite among the cast?
Ooh, I mean, it is really tough. But let me talk to you about some highlights of people that I really enjoyed. And again, I really enjoy talking to everybody. Maybe it's because I was a sucker that it was, you know, my first time out there, but I really legitimately just like to sit around and talk to 20 people before they play Survivor, especially with all the different backgrounds they come from. I gotta start with Elaine Stott, because she is a firecracker. She is a Kentucky
woman. Shake and bake.
Yeah, she's a Kentucky woman. She's wearing her own little bee hat. A camouflage bee hat, so I'll be very excited if and when she meets Boston Rob and he gets to see the appreciation in that. She's a pickup truck driver who works in a factory, and she is just a one-liner queen. I had so much fun with these interviews, but I don't know if I laughed as much as I did talking with Elaine. And Josh, I know you really enjoyed her too.
I loved Elaine. She killed me. I thought that she was so funny. A lot of really funny people. Ronnie Barda, who's a professional poker player, who just like, we just shot the shit for a good little while before we even started talking to each other. And he was the first person I spoke to of the entire cast. So he really set the tone for me. He was hysterical. So many funny people. So many people with like really incredibly captivating stories. When you get the chance to hear my conversation with Missy Bird, I think that you are going to be glued to your seats, is my prediction. She came in with a story that I could not have imagined in 1,000 years would be something that I would be hearing. She just had an epic tale of survival that impossible not to root for her as soon as you hear what she's been up against. And just a lot of people that are of that mold and have these very personal reasons for being out there. And a lot of people who've like had brushes with Survivor in the past and have nearly gotten out there already at this point and thought that their time had come and gone. And now here they are and they like have to pinch themselves and they can't believe it. So a cast with a lot of stakes behind them for sure. And not of the Omaha variety.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, Jack Nichting, who, had said, and Jeff told us as well, too, that, I mean, he was nearly on last season. He was nearly on Edge of Extinction. And dude is a cut for, like, a Joey Amazing cosplayer in terms of he has, like, long, curly hair and has, you know, that beach body. And so, you know, maybe he invested in that program. But, you know, he got to see firsthand, like, what that type of person, how they're perceived and almost magnified in his head of, like, okay, I can't play like that if I want to, you know, not get booted at the merge. I think that Vince is another really interesting story. This is a guy who almost has two different personalities. There's homeboy Vince and there's Stanford Vince. Vince grew up in one of the poorest communities in California as part of a very small minoritized community of Vietnamese people. And he goes on to Stanford where he learns to code switch. He learns to change his vernacular and his character to almost, you know, assimilate to the two different backgrounds, the two different worlds that he's straddling. And he is so much fun to talk to. There's also some pseudo celebs on this cast. Josh mentioned Ronnie, who had a little bit of run-ins. I think one of the biggest moments he's known for is there's a YouTube video where he was playing on a poker TV show with Jean Robert, actually, and a former Miss Finland. And I believe the former Miss Finland completely bluffed him and
yeah,
like,
I think that's
snowed
right.
him under it and basically just yeah. like cleaned him out, which he was wont to talk about. So he totally, you know, wears that on his sleeve.
He's got a good sense of humor about himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Elizabeth Basil is a former Olympic swimmer. I believe she's a two-time medalist. She's been to the past three Olympics. And she does motivational speaking now, but that's obviously, you know, a very well-decorated athlete. She joins the pantheon of former Olympians who have been on Survivor. Mm-hmm. We'll see if she brings her brains, brawn, beauty, and blazing speed as well. Tom Laidlaw is not only our first former NHL Survivor player, but our first Canadian Survivor player. There's a lot of speculation. I know they officially opened up the casting pool to Canadians last year, and people were wondering, okay, are we going to get at least one on there? And yeah, we do. He is the oldest guy. I actually believe he might be the oldest guy who has played since Joe Del Campo.
Yeah, I think that's by far, yeah, for sure. I think he's 60 years old.
Pop Joe. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, which is
yeah, talk
super
about Omaha steaks. Yeah, talk about the steaks. Laidlaw's great. Laidlaw was really funny to talk to. And you'll hear that in our interview as well, that I ask him all sorts of really stupid, obnoxious sports questions because I don't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I have an opportunity to get the answers from a man who knows. But it was really funny talking to, you know, some of the, it's a very diverse cast, and a lot of people like seized on that and noted that as they were trying to surmise what the theme of the season was. And it was a question that I asked just about everybody, like, what do you think's going on out here? And there were a couple of people who were like, I know that like Canadians can be on this show. I think it was Jack who was like, yeah, I think it might be the US versus Canada. So I'm trying to listen to people and hear if I can hear any Canadian accents. And I don't know what I, what, so like, he was like really trying to hear that. But it was a testament to the idea that the cast was it was drawn out very, very well and very thoughtfully and you know, just very representative of a bunch of different slices of life, to a point though that it would be really hard to glean a theme just by looking at the room. And I could tell you that literally not a single person got anywhere even close to identifying the theme of this season.
Yeah, the two they were between were either scholars versus athletes, because the other big thing is this is a jacked cast. This might be one of the most like physically adept casts we have ever seen. And they said that they didn't do that on purpose, but like there's just a lot of big buff guys and a lot of really strong women as well. So I don't know, maybe we'll see, you know, maybe that'll affect the way things are done in the challenge office. Maybe they'll up the toughness of the challenges, make them more like the Australian Survivor, like brutal physical stuff just to push them to their limits. But the two themes I think they really focused on around were either geography, because there are a lot of people from the East Coast this season, almost an inordinate amount.
A lot of Rhode Island, big Rhode Island representation.
Interesting about this cast, too, is a lot of them are in major career transitions. You have Molly Byman, who just went from being a teacher into law school. Kelly Kim went from the medical field to business school. Nora Salmon made a big living in the financial world, but now she's an entrepreneur in health and wellness. Dean Kowalski went from teaching to sales in New York City. One thing I love about this cast is, like Jeff said, it's not necessarily about occupation. It's about, you know, your story, where you look at that firsthand at two contestants, Karishma and Jason Linden, who a lot of people, I'm sure when the cast list comes out, might be comparing to the man that we're talking to in terms of his look, who's also another fellow Long Islander as well. But they're both personal injury attorneys, mm-hmm. but they have completely different stories. Karishma is somebody who, you know, came from this traditional Hindi household and, you know, grew up in Philadelphia. And then but when she married, she moved to Texas, had to completely upend her life, moved down to Texas, and is now doing Survivor for herself as one of the first, you know, quote unquote, selfish things she's done in her whole life. Jason is somebody who, you know, 7 years ago was working in a law firm, said, I don't like being on the bottom of this totem pole. Let me start my own thing, and has now built something from the ground up in New York City. So that's just a nice microcosm of the number of stories and how different they are, even if some professions or some locations might be the same. I really do feel like these 20 people all have a different story to tell. And to echo Josh before, I really hope they all get an opportunity to tell this story, because I was genuinely gripped by all of them.
All right, looking forward to seeing all of these people, at least in some capacity, whether they're taking tests or at least somewhere along the way. We'll get to see more about all 20 of these people. All right, what's number six, Mike?
So number six, despite, you know, the little gotcha that they do with the title of Island of the Idols, there are still going to be idols. But in a nice little, you know, prize for getting to be out there for this particular season, Josh and I actually had a bit of influence in the idols that at least will start the game.
Okay, how so?
Josh, you want to go into it?
So much as they've been doing since Survivor Second Chance, you know, since then, I think it was back then was when Probst was really out in front and saying, idols, no two idols are going to look the same. We're really trying to evolve that. So like the opportunities for people like, is that a fake idol, or can you create a fake idol that maybe doesn't look like much? But because some of these other idols have looked like maybe they could be fake, like it would be like a decent bluff. They're still trying to push that and still trying to play that. So when we got out there, it was, you know, before the game had begun, they were in the process of trying to figure out which idols they were going to be planting at the Lyro and Vokai tribe camps. And Mike and I were in the art department with them. And they said, look at the arrangement of idols on the table. Which idols do you think should go into the game? And we picked an orange one, and we picked a purple one. Mm-hmm. And those are the idols that are in the game, at least at the start. And Mike, I think we determined that whoever finds the orange idol is my winner pick for the season, and whoever finds the purple idol is your winner pick for the season.
Yes, so we are completely...
So we have no idea who our winner picks are.
Yes, we are completely throwing chance into the wind here and saying, you know, if you find an idol early on, that's usually a pretty good indicator of at least some success in the game. And mm-hmm. in a season called Island of the Idols, it's only appropriate that our winner picks revolve around idols. I believe we also coined them Phil and Lil in honor of not only our 90s nostalgia-loving Rugrats fascination, but also the fact that, you know, Philip Shepherd wore orange in Redemption Island, and Lil wore purple when she was an outcast. So I think it just has so many double entendres, much like the title of the season.
Getting a lot of airtime. So they have like a wall of the idols that could potentially go into the game, and
they were still in the development process of like which one works, which one is the one that should go into the game.
Okay.
And they turned the question over to us.
So nobody can get mad at you guys for something that
happens.
We
didn't build it. We didn't design it. No.
I'm sure there
are some listeners that are saying like, you should have taken a sledgehammer to all of them.
I know.
Why didn't you stop them?
Oh my God. Yeah, I have regrets.
You should have burnt down the art department.
Yeah. Arson
Island.
If
that's true, we might have been recording this from like our cells in our maximum security prison that Josh and I are in prison for after burning down the survivor art department.
No. Survivor season.
I just want to make sure that people aren't like, I don't want you guys getting negative feedback.
I mean, thank you for trying not to stop that.
I'm very protective. I'm very protective of that. I don't want anybody to get any sort of, you know.
Look, there was a nice array of idols on the table. I picked something that had like a very, just like a very basic stringy texture with a lot of shells and beads and stuff on it. And Mike picked one that has like a little purple necklace type of quality to it with some shells and stuff on there as well. They both look like idols.
Yeah, mine was a bit more intricate because I think I'd had the logic of like, well, they're weaving palm fronds, so maybe they'll think that it was just woven together and not real. So we'll see if exactly our 10 minutes of stammering and waiting to see which idol we picked is going to come to fruition and getting picked out as real or if it gets thrown into the fire.
I feel like it's a little bit like at the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade where you have to pick which idol. Hopefully you chose wisely.
Ironically enough, there was a person in chainmail who was standing there next to Jeff Probst who was telling us if we chose wisely or poorly.
Well, it was intimidating when one dream teamer went up to the table first and picked an idol and then disintegrated into ash in front of our eyes. Yeah. That was pretty messed up, to be honest. Okay. So at least we literally survived it.
That was a nice little fun thing we got to do as a bonus in our season. And that's going to segue into point number 7, which is the coverage of this season. And much like your opening line, Josh and I have decided to tag team a bit of our coverage so that, you know, people are going to be able to check out as much about everybody at once. So I'll throw it to you first, Josh, if you want to preview exactly what you're doing with everyone's listening pleasure over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, well, I thought that it made sense that if Mike and I were both the guys out there, that you would have the opportunity, you being the listener, the Survivor fan, you'd have the opportunity to meet different people at the same time. So Mike's coverage is going to begin with the members of the Vokai tribe that's in purple, and my coverage will start with the Lyra tribe in orange. So you're getting a healthy dose of both tribes, and at some point we will meet in the middle like ships in the night as we are moving on with our coverage, and you'll get a full spectrum of these people. As far as the delivery mechanism for how you will hear my interviews, this is the part where I disappoint maybe 20% of the people who are listening. I feel like that, I don't know if that's generous or if that's underestimating.
Is the Wandoff not coming back?
The Wandoff is here. The Wandoff will be here forever. First one out is not. There is no first one out this season. Not for lack of trying. Taryn and I had worked on it. He did a phenomenal job. I don't feel like I did. I tried really hard to come up with something that I thought was worthy of that first one out branding. And life has gotten complicated, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But you will still hear those interviews. Rob and I are actually going to be getting together and presenting those interviews, sort of similarly to how we did the speed dating for Triple H for season 35. If you remember those podcasts, it'll be a little more meat and potatoes. You'll still get all the interviews. It's just not coming with that same epic foo presentation. I don't think I have that in me anymore. I hope you don't hate me for that, and I hope that I'm just being overly cautious in all of these mea culpas and apologies, but I do feel really, really bad about it.
Josh, we are very appreciative to have the interviews, and even if it doesn't have some of the, you know, dressed up packaging around it on First One Out, we are all very much looking forward to hearing your interviews from location.
I think, just personally speaking, I think they're high quality interviews. I think that you're going to like them. I think you're going to be happy with the content. And it's just a little bit of a more survivable, manageable package for me. So I hope you can forgive me for it. And I hope that you like what you get to hear.
And so I guess with my stuff, to reference something that's popped up in this podcast as much as Lil, I don't know why stuff from like 15 seasons ago are popping up in season 39, but that's just how weirdly minded we all are. So I'm going to be bringing you Survivor stuff every day, every single day. I will not sleep a wink until we reach the premiere of Survivor Island of the Idols over at parade.com. So starting tomorrow, Tuesday, September 10th, I'm going to be bringing you at least one interview a day with a cast member. As Josh said, we're going to be going with Vokai first and then over to Lyro, and I'll be going alphabetically by first name. So I'll start with Dan Spilo. And then we'll go from there. I had a lot of fun with those. I did, you know, a little bit of potpourri questions, a little bit of questions based on their backgrounds. But I hope everyone enjoys them. It was my first time out, and I hope I did a good job, hopefully getting a good sense of who everybody is before they enter the game. The way it's going to work is it's going to be at least one interview a day. Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, because of the schedule, are going to have two interviews a day, a little bit of a double feature there.
Okay, so Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
Two interviews.
Survivor airs on Wednesdays, and then over the weekend, you'll get double the interviews just to make sure that we get to know everybody before we get into the premiere. Additionally, I'll have an interview with Jeff and Matt talking about this twist. I'll have an interview with Rob and Sandra for their new role as quote unquote idols. And I'll finish things off the day of the season premiere with a fun cast breakdown I did with Jeff and Matt, where we did some Survivor superlatives, which I love to do on the B&B, to help sort of get into this cast and who we think is going to do certain things in the game. So make sure you are tuned into Parade. I will, you know, publicize the hell out of it on my social media as well. But yeah, if you're in the mood for written and audio Survivor content, you're going to get a lot of it in the next 2+ weeks.
Yeah. So these are the 7 things that you need to know about the Survivor Island of the Idols. And Mike, is there anything else that we should know today?
I mean, we pretty much touched upon a lot of our experience. I will mention Josh and I did get a little taste of Survivor Boot Camp. We did go spearfishing. It went actually pretty well.
Josh yes.
caught a fish and a clam, which hopefully Monica Padilla did not hear that part of the podcast.
We don't have to talk about it. We really don't.
Josh was a real Aussie. I think he did a great job there. So we got to, you know, bone up on our Survivor skills while we indulged in some fish and other sea treats. But no, I mean, some more stuff will come in over the next couple weeks as to the specifics around these people and maybe a couple other things about the season as well. But I cannot say enough about not only how much fun I got to have out there and how much I truly got to look at Survivor from a completely different angle, which only enriched my enjoyment of the show. But I mean, it wouldn't have nearly as been enjoyable without, this guy by my side. So I'm very happy to have my giant face next to him in Rob's studio, looking out upon Survivor fans for the next several weeks.
Yes, I agree. It was honestly such a delight to be out there with Mike and to see your enthusiasm for everything unfolding. Really just like kept me very, very joyful the entire trip. And it was one of the most hilarious weeks of my life, largely because of Mike Bloom. And I'm excited for you guys to listen to the stuff that I have for you. I'm really excited for you guys to read Mike's interviews. I got to see you do some interviews with some producers and stuff. Like, like I got to be a fly on the wall. You're an excellent interviewer. Like you're really good at what you do, and I think that it's going to translate really, really well. And as somebody who once ran the Survivor beat for Parade, it puts a big smile on my face.
Hands.
To know it's in very good hands with Mike Bloom. And I think Mike Bloom, preseason MVP, gets my vote, and I'm really excited to read everything
Thank
that
you
read.
Josh, you made All my right. head so big, it feels like it belongs on Island of the Idols.
Yeah.
Yikes, dude. I'm out of here. Yeah. Close All it right. up.
Yes. There you go. All right. So what a great job you guys both did in the preseason. Very fun to have Survivor back. Of course, we could not do any of this podcasting without the support of our Rob Has a Podcast patrons. We're finishing up the Big Brother season. Plenty to talk about with the Survivor season around the corner. So great time to get on board and become a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, because that's where all of these people around the world that love this stuff, just like you do, have basically that there's nobody else in their lives that they have to talk about this stuff with. That is until they found robhasawebsite.com/patron, our patron community, patron only podcast feed, and much more. So follow Josh Wiggler on Twitter. He is at Round Howard. Mike Bloom is at a Mike Bloom type. Anything else, guys?
No, that's it. THR.com/survivor for all
and
my
survivors. Parade.com/tag/survivor. If you are interested in listening to Josh and I get silly about other island-based TV shows, we have started a Lost podcast in the off-season called Down the Hatch, which is an episodic weekly Lost rewatch over on Post Show Recaps. It has been an absolute delight so far. We've talked for way, way too long about Lost on reality TV wrap-ups. I'll be getting together with Leon and Boris to do some preseason stuff for the RHAP B&B, which is back for another season. We'll also be doing some international Survivor stuff as well. I know at the time this is being released, Josh will have just talked with Shannon Gates and myself about the season of Survivor South Africa, and we'll also be on with Shannon Gates talking about the finale of Australian Survivor, which has been a really awesome season so far and has made us raring and ready to go for what's to come with Island of the Idols.
All right. So we're here. It's the Survivor preseason. Be on the lookout for some cast interviews from Josh coming later on this week. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. We appreciate your subscribing and your star ratings here at the start of a new Survivor season. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.